We Worship. Wow, one of my favorite songs of all time. That's Yahweh by David G. Yes, yes, yes. Hey, welcome everyone. This is the Boomerang Radio Show right here on Studio W The Buzz. We come at you each and every Sunday, 3 p.m. on the West Coast, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to mix it 5 Central and 4 Mountain Time. Got a very special show coming to you tonight. Oh, that's Brother Tisdale. He just joined the stream, and we're waiting.
Hello.
Hey, Brother Tisdale, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking. I hope everybody else is doing fine.
We're doing well. Just waiting for Ann to connect. She's having some technical difficulties. And so we're going to go around the board, and today we have a very, very special guest with us today, Dr. Koye Oriende. I hope I pronounced your name properly, sir.
It's good enough.
You said good enough. Okay. All right. All right. I did my best on that. But Ann should be joining us because she's going to introduce you. But I want to go around the panel and introduce you to our panel. And let's see, Dr. Sims, she just logged out. So let's go to Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. I hope you can hear me okay. I make sure I got a good signal to get in the show. How's everybody?
Well, you're doing, sounding pretty good right now. You sound
well,
pretty
that's
good.
Very good. I got a chance to see my niece on TV. She works for the NHRA. As you probably know, it's a very close-knit, good old boys club, but she's one of the few black women that work in the NHRA. She works for John Force.
Oh.
Got a chance to see her on TV. She looked good.
Outstanding.
I met him and his daughters. Yeah, nice family.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah. She works with the daughters and with John Force, yeah.
Okay. And then we have, oh, there's Dr. Sims there. Dr. Sims, thanks for joining us.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, well, you're loud and clear. Got a very special show. I think I've been talking about, I've been bragging about this gentleman all week long. And that's Dr. Oriya Rinde. You know, doctor, how do you pronounce your name?
Well, it's Oriya Rinde.
Okay, Koye Oriende. All right. I'm doing the best I can, sir. We'll catch up. Okay. But anyway, I want to introduce you to the rest of the panel. To my far left here is, Dr. Cecilia Sims, and she has a program on this network. And it is Miss CC's Kitchen, which airs every Thursday. And I believe the time is 4 p.m. on the West Coast and 7 p.m. right here on the East. And so she's also a mental health specialist, Dr. Sims. So, yes. All right. Say hello.
Hi, everybody. How are you this wonderful Sunday?
Absolutely. We're waiting for our dear sister Ann to join us because she has all the credentials on our good doctor here. And we're going to talk about a subject that I think that has been just jabbed and talked about just a little bit, but it really hasn't been given the attention that it desperately needs. That's addressing mental illness. Let's see, what month is this? Mental Health Awareness Month?
I don't think so. They've been
well every month should be
Gay Pride Month.
Well, no, well,
it
should be every month should be mental health awareness month, in my opinion. And then
65 days a year.
Oh, my goodness. We can't get enough of it. And then also to the panel, that's Danny Tisdale, my good friend, Deacon Danny Tisdale. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. So glad to be with everyone on the show. I'm just more of a concerned citizen and want to listen as much as I possibly can to learn as much as that I can from people with that's filled with wisdom and knowledge.
Absolutely.
And I'm just glad to be here and glad to have you as a friend with you.
And my pleasure, my friend. Yeah, it's okay for us to have our own opinions, but it's always great to consult with the professionals. And that's why we have two professionals on this show tonight as far as this mental health arena is concerned. So, Brother Dearsdale, thank you so much for joining. We're waiting for our dear sister. She has all the credentials. If not, I'm going to have the good doctor to tell us a little bit about himself, his credentials, and things like everything like that after we go to my good partner who airs with me each and every Thursday on Mad Mike and Wild Will, which airs right after Miss CeCe's Kitchen. Good evening, my dear friend.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be with you always. Yep. And just so the doctor knows, the Mad is with two D's.
Thanks for sharing this with us. Oh, by the way, my dear friend, I know it's a day or two late, but happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thanks, happy everyone.
Birthday. Well, actually, his birthday was Thursday, the 22nd.
Oh, okay.
Oh, happy birthday, Mad Mike.
Nice. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
And if you guys really want to, it has nothing to do with this show, believe me. But if you really want to be entertained, you need to listen to Mad Mike and Wild Will each and Thursday nights right here, because we play music and we believe that music is therapy, especially the good stuff. And we play practically all genres of music. You might hear some country, you might hear some classical, blues, soul, whatever, right? Doctor, mm-hmm. Please introduce yourself.
So, like you tried to say, my name is Koye Oyerinde, and I'm primarily a pediatrician with extensive experience in health policy and research and teaching, and I recently wrote a book about health policy, so that's really my background.
Hey, Anne, I think William wanted you to give the doctor a full introduction.
Oh, absolutely. That's what she's there for. Absolutely. Anne.
I have no other purpose in this life except for that.
Is that what
you're saying, William?
That's not what I said at all. See,
you're
twisting my words, Anne. I wanted you to give the doctor a proper introduction, since you accused me of butchering our resumes of our previous guests.
Oh, well,
yes.
It's true that you have done that.
Man, William, we're not even 5 minutes into this broadcast and you're already in trouble.
Oh,
right. Welcome to the family, Mike. Welcome to the family.
Well, then I'm doing my job. Doctor, please excuse my co-host, please, sir. All right.
Oh, yes, Dr. Oriende knows how you behave. He's been on the show before. He's well aware that you do not know how to control your mouth. He knows. But
okay.
Yes, I will be more than happy to introduce Dr. Oriende. Just please give me a moment. I'm still having technical difficulties with my computer system, and I'm trying to pull everything up, but it's just going very, very slowly. So
okay, well, take your time, my dear sister.
Well, it's not that. Well, it's not me taking my time.
Uh-huh.
It's the computer taking its time and not cooperating, which is why I'm so late, because I've had to reboot and all that other stuff. And anyway, William, if I didn't know any better, I would think it was something you did. but I don't think you know how to put viruses on computers, so I won't say it was you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my first question to the doctor is first question to the doctor is, when people harass you constantly, could that cause a mental health issue?
And what about passive aggressive? Let's deal with all of that. Okay?
Yeah.
Passive aggressive self. Come on.
Okay. Do you think we? I've lost control, doctor. I've lost control. Do you think we could get into the interview? Thank you, Anne.
I think, and this is just me. Uh-huh. If you are the one instigating the issue,
come on, girl,
then it's your fault that you are having these mental health problems.
Okay,
that's just me. Now, I don't have a medical degree, but maybe you should start with you. I'm just, you know, it's an idea.
Wow, that's good.
Okay, this is going to be real good. Okay. All right. Anne, would you please?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Introduce the doctor. Thank you.
I'll be glad to as soon as Microsoft Word stops processing.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to control, I'll delete and start over, but it's not, again, my whole computer.
For my information, I'd like to understand passive aggressive. Does that mean you're not really knowledgeable in the passive side, but you're very
No. No, no, Danny. Passive aggressive is trying to appear sweet, but you're yet aggressive.
Uh-huh.
You have an under aggressive words in getting what you want. Uh-huh. Okay. Mm. And in declaring your dominance in a very passive and but yet aggressive way.
Okay. Mm. Okay. That's your understanding, Dr. Sims?
Well, a supremacist mindset with racism is a mental disorder also, isn't it?
I think so. Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to ask the doctor a host of questions here throughout the interview. Ann, did you freeze up on us?
Hold on. I'm going about it another way. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay, very good. Hopefully this will work.
Uh-huh. I hope so.
Hold on. These are all...
You need to get your sons in there to work your computer there. Anna.
Yeah, that would probably help.
But your language broke up just like with Dr. Demring. Everybody's language is broke up.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Well, unfortunately, it's not them. That it's the computer. It's just old. It's time for an upgrade. Uh-huh.
And I
haven't done that yet. But anyway, give me a second.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm looking through my phone, which is not what I wanted to do, but we'll get it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What did you say? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, this is going real well. All right, thank you. Okay.
William, what you trying to say? Because I haven't butchered any words.
Well, I didn't butcher any either. Okay. Oh, Dr. Sims, she's back. Okay.
Everybody went out and you're...
No, you're the only one went out.
No. I went out on purpose.
Oh.
I did that on purpose because everybody was breaking up, just like what Ann was talking and her verbiage would break up. Oh. Like what happened with Dr. Demery. Everything was going on with everybody.
Okay. All right. Are we good now?
Well, yeah, I can see you now.
Okay.
Prayerfully, it doesn't happen again.
Uh-huh. Okay. You know, I tell you what, this is what we're going to do. Dr. Ari Ende, I'm going to ask a question. We want to go around the board, and then Ann can come up and just tell us a little bit more about you. I want to start off with the first question, and I asked you this. When you were on the Teenage Show, and I think that's what really, really captured my attention, because that show, ladies and gentlemen, if you missed it, the doctor was on Teens Talk Truth radio show, and he was talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, he was talking about mental health regarding our teens and young adults, okay? And I asked the question. I was so intrigued with the question. I think at the very end, Ann and I started asking more questions than the teens, right? But it was a fascinating show. Doc, I was asking you, worration, frustration, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, maybe even going into depression, could that cause a mental conflict, contribute to pain, even exacerbate pain? And you answered yes. And I didn't know, it was just something that came to my mind. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit? Because we have a lot of people that are in pain, and I'm wondering, if it's not imaginary because their bodies are aching, but can it be brought on by stress and worry and depression?
Yes. I mean, that's the simple answer. The body is all one connected system, even though for convenience, we break it down into different parts. So there's a psychiatrist, there's a dentist, there's an OBGYN, but the point is that if one thing is sick in one part, it affects the whole thing. So whether if you have backache, then you might not sleep well.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't sleep well, then you're grumpy at work, and then your mental health is affected. So it's a whole system. It's a complex system, but everything affects everything else. So,
body, mind, and soul.
Exactly. So if one of those is ill, everything is ill. Sometimes you are able to function, but we are not functioning optimally. Mm. So for us to function optimally, every part needs to be in good health. Now, if we are anxious and depressed, then we are more likely to feel pain. So essentially our pain threshold drops a little bit. Whereas if you are excited and happy, you feel less pain. And you see that even in the medicines we use to treat pain, you have the anti-inflammatory, things like ibuprofen brings down inflammation and helps the pain. But sometimes they add a little caffeine into that treatment to give us some excitement. So they don't need so much of the anti-inflammatory because we are now more excited and happy and, you know, you're all over the place. So you feel less of the pain. So it works in both ways. When you're depressed and unhappy, you're not sleeping well, you're going to feel more pain, even much more than regular. And then when you're happy and well relaxed and stress-free, you're less likely to feel pain.
Excellent. You know, a couple of things. I know some people and perhaps someone else on the panel knows people that, to me, they're taking too many prescription drugs. I know some people are taking 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 medications a day. Okay? So let me ask you, could it be that they are going in and they have this, they are worried about things and they're having all this pain, and then the doctors are over prescribing this medication, and now they're in another, they have another problem now because now they may be hooked on these painkillers. And I find out that they're saying, well, I had to double my doses because the single dose wasn't working anymore. So they increase, and you're having all these chemicals pumped into your body, and perhaps maybe unnecessarily because of the way that we think and perceive life and situations.
Well, I mean, there's a concept called polypharmacy where, you know, let's say the particularly elderly people with multiple health problems. Mm. So she might have back pain, she has high blood pressure, she has diabetes, and now she goes to different experts for these problems. Mm-hmm. She goes to the endocrinologist with the diabetes, or they give her some insulin and give her some pain reliever, and then she goes to for the back pain to the orthopedic surgeon, who adds more pain relievers. In the end, if you have a primary care person, you have a primary care provider who is having oversight of all your medicines, who is seeing what the endocrinologist is writing for you and what the kidney doctor is writing for the high blood pressure and all of that. And he's looking at all of them and seeing how they interact and how some of the complications and side effects, some of the side effects can multiply. So it's the role of the primary care provider to then say, you don't take this because you already have this from your back doctor. You reduce the dose of this one because that one's going to cause you this other problem. Mm. So that's the role of the primary care doctor. But sometimes in our disjointed healthcare system in the U.S., it's possible for those doctors not to talk to each other, especially if you don't have a primary care doctor and you're just going shopping around the specialists. Mm. And that can get you into polypharmacy, where you have multiple drugs for the same problem. Wow. Prescribed by different doctors.
Amazing. Before I go any further, because I'm sure the panel have many questions, I don't want to hog this. And what do you have for us? I think you're muted.
You're muted.
Yeah, you're muted. Oh, there you are. Okay. And? We have no sound.
Not coming through, Anna.
Yeah, we have no sound from you. Okay. All right. Tell you what, why don't we do this? And let's see if we can get your sound back. Okay, you might want to check with your engineers. All right.
All your right. Sons.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yo, yeah, I see your lips moving. Mike, do you have questions for the doctor?
I do. And thank you for being here, sir. I really do appreciate it. I have kind of a two-part question. I read, because William makes me study, because when I come on the Boomerang Show, I have to at least have some kind of modicum of information or knowledge before I start talking here. I read that since the 1930s, mental health has declined in the United States and is currently still declining. That's why is that is my first question. And in part to that, I want to ask you in particular, it says from John Hopkins says Americans are over-diagnosed and over-treated for depression, according to the new study conducted by John Hopkins. So it's a two-part question. If mental health is declining since the 1930s through today, how does that relate to being overdiagnosed in society?
Well, I mean, I've not read that particular study from John Hopkins, but let me try and think through it. One, our lives have become more complicated than the 1930s, mm-hmm. right? Now we have the internet, we are oversaturated with information, we have Twitter, we have Facebook, we have all these things that keep us
bombarded.
Excitable, I'll say. Every little thing, there's a whole, you know, debate and conflict about, you can say good morning to someone on Twitter and it's already a problem. And there are people asking that you be canceled and you know, you're losing your job because you said something on social media. So our lives have become more complicated. Whereas in the 1930s, you get back from work, you get a siesta, you can play games with the kids and all that stuff. We don't have that anymore. People are working 2-3 jobs and still not comfortably meeting their financial needs. So I can very much understand if you say our mental health is in decline. And it's much more because of the kind of lives we live now, kind of, how much more complicated the life is.
So you do believe that mental health has declined since whatever date you want to pull, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever. So you do believe we're in decline and continue to be in decline. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the life in the 1930s, you had probably had a TV station, one TV station that shut down at 10 p.m. or something like that. You had a phone in the kitchen that doesn't move, right? Doesn't follow you everywhere. Now we live with a life where you have a phone on you everywhere at every point. You have internet, you have all these things. When my father used to go to work, when he was on vacation, he had to hand over to somebody else. And then he went on vacation. When I go on vacation now, my phone goes with me and I still get people. So that patient, what did you do? You know, what are we supposed to do about this patient? I'm supposed to be on vacation, but they're still reaching out to me. I think technology has worsened our lives and our mental health. In many ways, that's improved, you know, productivity. You know, we can do more work. I can work from home. I can do all kinds of more interesting things, you know, write my own book, you know, without needing a typist and all of that stuff.
So, and let me follow up with my other question, which was how much overdiagnosis occurs. If you had to put a percentage on it, and, you know, of course, we can't hold your feet to the fire here, but if you had to put a percentage on how much mental health is overdiagnosed or incorrectly diagnosed, what kind of figure would you throw out for us?
Well, I won't want to throw any figure out at all. I'll just say that there are problems with the way our health system is organized. So if you were to go to your doctor, the system requires, it gives you maybe 15 minutes of attention. Well,
do, in that case, do you believe there's some overdiagnosis that does occur?
Yes, certainly. Some overdiagnosis occurs, but I don't think I can put a figure to it, but I understand how, you know, if you have, you know, mental health issues, rather than your primary care person spending time to figure it out, he's probably working on the clock too. He has to get someone, there's somebody else waiting outside his door. So you have 15 minutes to say what you have to say. And he says, okay, you're not sleeping well, insomnia, okay, depression, okay, go take this and off you go. In a better system, you'll have more time with your doctor to go through what's going on, and you might not need medication at all. You might just do some lifestyle changes. Yeah.
Fair enough. I have some follow-up questions for downline, but I don't want to hog it all. So, Dr. Sims, we're back to you.
Yes. I was listening to, I can't pronounce your name, and I don't want to butcher it. So, our guest today. But
well,
the
first name is easy to pronounce. That's Koye.
Okay.
Koye.
Now your first one is K?
Koye.
Koye.
Koye. Okay.
Excellent.
Dr. Koye, I was listening to Mike and his questions, and they're very great. And when I interpret the word decline, I'm looking at what is going on in media and what is being reported. I believe it's been an uprise in mental health disorders because of the situations that are going on today. And with me being in the same field of mental health, and there's different facets of mental health as well, what is causing, and there's a positive, Mike, and there's a negative when we say decline. And I was looking at the definition, and there is a different determination. There's a positive decline, and then there's for upward, for betterment in numbers, and then there's a negative decline, which causes a greater increase of mental health disorders. And with me looking at society today, I wish it was such a decline, but with me looking at media, people are committing suicide. People are going out doing all sorts of things. They are medicating themselves with over-the-counter media drugs and things like that. And I believe that, and I don't know what you feel, Dr. Koye, about people are self-medicating other than going to a bona fide physician. Because, and how do you feel about this? Because the ramifications of some of the medications that are prescribed to a person who is having mental health disorders, we have to remember that there's abuse involved, there's depression involved, there is spirit of abandonment, all sorts of decline for a person. A lot of people don't even know that this is their issue unless it's being made aware. And I know I'm going around the bush because I'm listening to, even to the news, they're pushing mental health. Go and see about your mental health. And if there was such a decline, then why are the promotion for people to go and get their mental health, get it diagnosed so that they can get the proper medication? But then there's some medications, Dr. Koye, that causes people to have more of a decline because the ramifications, the side effects of that medication cause them to go into greater problematic areas. Because I hear some of the medication says, if you have suicidal ideations, if you have depression, if you have insomnia, okay, they're trying to get help, but these things are causing the adverse effects. What are do you have any kind of remedy that would help an individual to know exactly? Because even I heard you say about medical doctors, them going to a medical physician. But if they're prescribing these medications that are causing the adverse effects, then isn't it a catch-22 that you're not really solving that mental issue? How do you feel about that?
Yes. I mean, I don't think there's any drug, any medication that's free of side effects. Mm. They all have side effects because they're not, even some of the foods we eat have side effects,
mm-hmm.
right? If I take too much beans and you feel gassy and, you know, you have tummy upsets and you heartburn and all that. So what doctors do is to try to solve the problem you're presented with. So if you are to present with, say, impulsivity, just jumping around, you can't focus, you can do all of this. Okay, so they might give you a drug to help with that. So that drug might make you also have difficulty sleeping because they're trying to, because they give you some kind of stimulant. Well, if you get so stimulated, then maybe you won't sleep well at night. Mm-hmm. And then if it's so bad that you can't function, so you have to be on the drug, and they might try to titrate and say, okay, let's give you a little amount. Let's give you 10 milligram and not 20, and let's see if that helps. And if you still say, I can't sleep, then they say, okay, let's take you off the medicine. They say, no, what I really like the medicine because it works for me. Then they have to now add a second drug to help you sleep at night. So, and then typically the drugs that help you sleep also make you sluggish mentally in the morning. So you sleep well, but you wake up with some level of confusion. So it depends on what kind of work you're doing. If you can't tolerate being confused in the morning, then you can't take those medicines. So if you're going to drive to work, you're going to wake up at 5:30 in the morning to drive to where you're working, you kind of wake up and be confused. So then they can't use that medicine. Then they might find another one. And so that's the way the system works, that we focus on the problem you presented, but the medicine for that problem might then cause a side effect. And then the doctor works to find a way around that side effect. Sometimes you don't need medicine. For example, when you have very mild depression, exercise improves your mood. So say, go do exercise. Exercise will help your mood, will make you sleep better at night. And, you know, the next day you feel better. But people don't want to exercise. Well, when I saw you in the gym, like 2 years ago. Okay. So you take a walk in your neighborhood. Well, my neighborhood is dangerous. Okay, so how do we help you out without having to medicate you? So, you know, so the doctor ends up saying, well, you know, I've tried. I said, you know, jog in the neighborhood, you can. Go to the gym, no, you won't. Okay, so take this medication to help your mood. And then that might help affect you in the other ways that you cannot now sleep well. And unfortunately, we are limited in what we can do. Yeah.
Thank you, doctor. Anyone have a question? Ann, are you back with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Love yes, I can. Yes, thank you.
Good praise job. The Lord. It's only taking half an hour to get all this work done.
I didn't want to be the only female on the panel. Oh, I'm sorry. No,
I know, right? They gang up on you sometimes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I see he's hiding. We're going to help him today. All right. Dr. Teal's there. I'll call him Dr. Teal. But then
I had a quick question for the doctor. Oriende?
Correct.
I relocated from California, been back in Texas for about 3 years now. And I never had seen the name of a drug called gabapentin. I have seen since then back in Texas, that drug is given to humans, to animals, but it has multiple uses. And when I was reading the side effects, it was very alarming to me to see the side effects. But it seems like that particular drug, maybe it's been around for years. Maybe I just didn't know it. But I didn't experience it to come in. What can you say about that particular prescription?
Well, I mean, that drug has been around for, I'm going to say, a couple of decades now.
Okay.
And first of all, I'll say, be careful when you read the insert on drugs. Otherwise, you will never use them, because they're required by law to list all the potential side effects of the medicine. And by law one, by two, it also protects them. But then if you complain, you cannot sue them because they already said it in the insert that it might cause this other problem. Now, the role of your doctor is to look at your health problem and say, if I give you this drug, will it help whatever the problem is? And so this is where we need a health system that permits enough communication between the doctor and the patient. Because there's no one drug that fits all. So when you get prescribed a particular medicine that gives you side effects, I'll give you a good example. My mother in her 80s, we go to her doctor, we get her prescription, and then she has a side effect. But we can't get back to see her for another 4 months. On the phone, it's impossible to reach the doctor's nurses. When you finally reach them, they can't help you. They want to talk to the doctor, so you have to call back again. And so it's a whole chore trying to get to know what to do with the drug. Should we reduce the drug? Should we stop using it? But her blood pressure is going to keep going up if we don't use it. But then she's also fainting when she uses the drug. What are we going to do? In a good society, you're supposed to have a much more smoother communication with the doctor.
Right.
And that's the problem with this particular drug you're describing, that it's a drug that requires a good amount of titration so that you have the right dose without side effects. And when you take too much of it, then you have much more side effects.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, my prescribed taking it 3 times a day. I've never done that. I just take enough to not have a sided nerve problem that has occurred with me.
Well, you should talk to your doctor to let them know that you're not taking it, because they might find another drug that's less potent,
mm-hmm.
that you can use once a day and not have to take several times a day.
Mm.
Yes, sir. Thank Very you. Good. Go on, Dr. Sims.
Dr. Kaye.
Yes, ma'am.
You were talking about the medications, and I think my mind just really goes with listening to the statement and also how these medications are prescribed. There's no one, two persons who are the same in the dynamics of their body makeup.
Correct.
And you prescribe these medication, and the cause and effect are subsequently different.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it could be more harmful to an individual, such as the medication that Danny prescribed. Now, I'm going to be very, very transparent. I had suffered severe depression because of multiple deaths, one right after the other. So I went into a grave depression. And I was prescribed medications, I can't, because there's so many that are antidepressants. But what happened was it made me feel very, very funny. And I guess I'm the kind of person, I don't like something messing with my head, because it's like it was messing with my head.
Mm.
And I was having psychotic episodes. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I stopped taking it because my body was not accepting the medication very well. And I know that in the medical, and doing research, is that there are people, they operate differently with medications that are prescribed. My question, I guess what I'm alluding to, is who has the gauge on what to prescribe to each human And where did it come from and how did they gauge it? Did they gauge it by one secular culture and make it beneficial for everybody? How do you gauge that? Because you were saying something about talk to your doctor about, you tell Mr. Tisdale, talk to your doctor about how you're not taking it, because I stopped taking it. And yeah, it is a mental thing. I understand that. However, but because the way it made me feel, I don't like feeling like that because then I'm not my authentic self. Does that make sense? Correct. And so it just made me feel like I'm just like a zombie. I didn't want to feel like that. So where did the gauge process come on the type of medication to give the same to somebody who is suffering depression? I'll use that term, that mental health problem, using depression. And why are same medications used for many, especially, and I'll have to say this, in our culture, they quickly prescribe certain medications in this arena. Where did they get that gauge that allow them to do that?
Well, let me just say, broadly speaking, there's a whole process around approval of drugs for particular conditions. So we call them clinical trials. So if I decide, I've created this new molecule and it treats depression, well, I can't just go and give it to people. That's illegal. I'm not allowed to do that. But there's a whole clinical trial process I have to go through. You might remember in college when they would say, come and get this and get $100 and test this thing. Well, that's the first stage of the trial. They want to prove that thing that they produce does not kill. So they give it to people, volunteers will come and drink the medicine and say, and then they measure your urine or take a blood test or take a blood pressure or whatever. They'll do all kinds of things to prove that substance doesn't kill, doesn't make you feel sick. There are nobody is having any untoward reactions to it. So that's the first step. Now step two, of the phase two of the clinical trials is to prove that you actually treat what you said you're going to treat. So now you get that molecule and say, okay, I'm going to go look around for people with the illness. So the first people are just volunteers. They don't have the illness. The next phase two is to then look for people who actually have the disease that you want to treat and say, here it is, take this and you'll feel better. And they will monitor you for, typically they take about 100 to 400 people and test this new thing on them. And where this thing might sometimes be, where there might be some problems with this phase two trial is that a lot of the people who they now select to try the substance may be in one particular community. So my find is mostly white people, mostly white men. There are very few women in the panel. Sometimes no black people in the panel. So in the end, you might not pick up all the other problems that might happen to the communities that are not tested. But in general, the idea is to look for people who now have the illness and test the medicine on them. So if they feel better, that proves that your drug is working. Now you want to go to a phase three trial. In the phase three trial, they're looking at comparing this new drug with everything else in the market. So now they're saying, this is my new drug. Here are the other things that we used to treat depression. And I'm comparing my new drug with those ones. And seeing, what's the speed of recovery? How fast do you get better? Any side effects. They also measure things like cost of care. If my new drug doesn't make you any much better, but much more expensive, then it doesn't get approved. So there's no point if you're going to be so expensive, but you're not making anybody, there's no advantage over what's there. And so that's generally, that's the way we then come up with Now, okay, so the particular dose that we give to people, there are all kinds of tests in cell cultures, in lab mice models, that will say, okay, this mouse of this weight is about, is comparable to an average man. So if we give, let's say, 0.1 dose to the mouse, that would be equivalent to like 10 milligrams in the full-grown man. And that's the rough way in which we kind of gauge what the initial dose might be. You know, and it's not a hard and fast science. So if I give you the initial dose that you projected will work, it might not work or might cause side effects. Well, that you find in your phase 2 trial, and then you want to cut the dose or increase the dose depending on, you adjust it as it's, you know, as you see in this trial. Now, in spite of all of that effort, in the real world, you might now have people who are, I'll call them outliers, so they don't really conform to that middle zone where everybody falls in. And for some reason, you give them this drug and they're having, you know, terrible skin rashes, or they're hallucinating and so on. Mm-hmm. But they'll be like 5% of the population or 2% of the population. So the federal authorities, the FDA, will still approve the drug because for most people it works well. Hmm. But there's that little 2 to 5% or thereabout who have side effects. And that's where the drug insert will now list all those side effects. For most, the vast majority of the population will not have any of those side effects. Hmm. And that's where your communication with your doctor helps. So now he's expecting those side effects, but there's no way he can predict it. Hmm. So he gives you the medicine because he knows it works well. He's had feedback from other patients that, oh, that thing works well. He gave it to me, I felt better. Blah, blah. Okay. Now, when he now prescribes it to you and you have side effects, if he doesn't hear about it, then he doesn't hear about the side effects. And it's helpful when he knows, okay, some people are having this problem when I give them these drugs. And then there's a whole feedback system back to the manufacturers and the researchers who are working on the drugs to say, that thing works well in most people, but a few people are telling me this. And that helps them to either tweak the drug or produce a different drug with certain molecules taken off. And then we'll get a better drug. Mm-hmm. But there's no, we don't have any hard and fast rule that one drug will work for everybody. Yeah.
That makes sense. Doctor,
if I can just step in right there, since I brought up that one particular drug, gabapentin, I was told that it was in the origination of where it came from, it was to treat depression mm-hmm. and mental disorder. But they found out that it was good to treat for arthritis and sciatic nerve pain for the nervous system.
Right.
It's kind of weird how they concluded to get to that point. I guess from what you just said, then by the testing of those that they tested, they come to find out that it did help some other areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, indeed. There are several drugs we use that were initially designed for something else.
Right.
A good example would be Viagra that we use in men who
blood pressure.
Yes, it was initially designed for a particular type of hypertension, pulmonary hypertension. And then those who were on the trial said, "Well, it helped me out somewhere else." and that's how, you know, you got repurposed into something else.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Hey, doctor, you know, it's kind of funny, but it's not. But the question is, and like you said, sometimes, you know, the doctor will prescribe something, or they'll find out through the trials and even through examples of their own practices that these drugs will help out in other areas. Now, Danny was talking about some different pains or whatever it is. I don't, was it sciatic nerve pain? And
right. Yeah, sciatica. Something that I experienced, uh-huh. And once I got here, they prescribed this. But when the lady started talking about it, because uh-huh. I asked a couple of questions, so she said, "Well, this is for depression." Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, "Okay, this don't add up to me. How that's going to help my sciatic nerve pain?" But she said, "Well, it works in the nervous system."
Uh huh. Now
so that's how all that came
about. Right. And of course, I'm not a doctor, but you know, that kind of makes sense to me because I've never had a sciatic nerve condition or anything like that. But if you're in constant pain, you can go into depression, right? And so if you can address that issue there, then that might help out with the depression too. So I can see how that can go hand in hand. So that does make sense to me. It does. You know, because a lot of people who are depressed are experiencing some sort of pain. I don't know whether it's mental pain, physical pain, medical, psychological, or whatever it is, right? Pain, you know, if you're in a relationship and you have a broken heart, that is painful, even though it doesn't go under the definition of what we call a pain, like if you stump your toe or something of that nature, right? So I can understand that. I can definitely understand that. I have a question for you, doctor. And you deal a lot, when you were on the Teens Talk Truth radio show and you were addressing, issues as far as our teenagers were concerned. So do you deal with mostly teenagers or adults or a combination of the both, of the two, rather?
Well, I did mostly with children.
Okay.
So, especially children under 18.
Uh-huh.
We sometimes will treat kids as old as 26 if they grew up if they grew up in the system.
Right. Right.
So if we've been seeing them since they were like 10, 11, all the way to 26, yes.
Absolutely.
But we won't take new patients once they're already 18. Mm. We just go to the adult care, because since we are just pediatricians, we push them to adult care.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it all goes hand in hand because someday these children will be adults. And then some adults act like children anyway. So I think, but anyway, my point is, and I heard something very closely, I think when Dr. Sims was talking to you and you were talking about, in some cases, medicine is not necessary. And it seemed mm-hmm. like to me that you approach this not only from a scientific, but a psychological standpoint as well. And that leads me to, like, we talk about Mike Ward, my good friend, and we do Mad Mike and Wild Will. And we talk about how music is soothing, okay? Mm-hmm. And there could be some things, and if my understanding is correctly, there are some physicians throughout the world that will use music therapy versus drug therapy, which leads to, you know, you talk about, well, medicine may not be necessary. I also heard you say something about exercising. You know, I want to throw something else in there. Also, reading a good book and maybe even hanging around really good, positive people. Because, you know, if you hang around negative people, sometimes they can bring you down, too. I know I'm throwing a lot on your plate, but it seems like to me you're not an advocate of just prescribing a pill. Am I correct?
Correct. I'll say the first thing is not to prescribe a pill. The pill is an adjunct to the therapy. It's something you bring on when everything else has failed. It shouldn't be the first thing in line.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this goes back to the whole idea of our mental health in decline. In the past, we spent most of our life outdoors. So even if you came back from work, you might sit down on the balcony with your neighbor and play a game and have orange juice, or freshly squeezed orange juice. I remember my mom used to have that teacher with little cups that you put fresh juice in the 70s. I don't know why that's very good, healthy food. I don't know why it's gone away. I don't see it anywhere anymore. Well, that's the quality of life then. You come back from work, you sit down with your kids, and they all play a little game outdoors, out there, right there. Now we're all cooped up inside most of the day. We're all in front of some screen or the other. We're all with some mobile phone, smartphone, you know. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the things that's happening to, particularly in pediatrics, poor diet, lack of exercise leads to they have constipation, they're not sleeping, they're grumpy in school the next day, they come back and the teacher says, please put them on something, I need help, they're disrupting my class. Well, they're not exercising, get them to exercise. They're not eating right, get them to eat right. By the time you fix those two, they're not constipated, they're sleeping better, they do better in school. They're not grumpy in school. So, as it affects kids, it also affects adults. Many of us in the States don't take time off for lunch. We work at our desk through lunch. Sometimes we eat on the computer working. Well, we need a break. The brain needs a break. So we need to get out of the office, take a walk, midday walk, sit down somewhere under the sky somewhere and just chill. And then go back to work.
Absolutely.
But you know, I understand that if you're working on the 15th floor of a building in New York, there's very little area where you can walk off to and relax. So you might end up taking your lunch on your desk.
Right.
But that's the kind of interventions that we need to bring back to our lives. That it's not just work without time to play, time to reflect on how our day went. And then, of course, the quality of our food is also in decline. Mm. So when you get a banana in Kroger, one of your, you know, the grocery stores, it's been traveling maybe for a couple of months to get to that store.
Right.
It's really poor quality banana you're eating. You know, we, and then you have the food industry, they are happy to use pesticides and fungicides and all these other sides to spray on the food. And I don't think the oversight over that is adequate. A lot of the things we eat in the US will be banned in the European Union because they have a more stringent regulations for food products.
Yes. You know, so, I'm sorry, go on, sir, please.
Yeah, so all of these things then go on to affect our health, including our mental health. Yeah.
I wish Ann was here because this is right around her wheelhouse, you know, with her show, The Eden as an Act of Worship Ministry show. And we've talked about this on the Boomerang Radio Show, how what you ingest, what you digest and put in your bodies, you know, put in your bodies, it can also affect your mental health. The foods that we eat, some of these processed foods or these, what's the word?
GMO, genetically modified organism.
Yes, GMO. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. GMO. I'm not going to hog. Mike, I'm going to come to you with your next question, but I want to talk to Dr. Demery because the doctor, he was talking about the body needs rest. And I believe that's biblical, too, if I'm not. Isn't that correct, Dr. Demery?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are scriptures that lead to it. People have misinterpreted it, but there are scriptures that lead to that and allude to it, yeah.
The body does need rest. Do you have a question before we go to Mike?
Yeah, real quick, doctor, my question is that I've worked in hospice for many, many years, and I learned that we talked about, William had mentioned it, I think, pain is what the patient says it is. So it's important, I think, for all of us to communicate with our particular physician which I do with mine. I have a really good relationship with mine. I have a really good physician. He sits and listens to me and asks questions based upon what I tell him. And pain has always been what the patient says it is. Even though someone else might not think what your pain is what the patient says it is. So with that in mind, my question is this. We talked about it for about two shows, and it was a pretty hot topic for a while, and that was AI, artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And I wonder how artificial intelligence and mental health affect one another. I think it is a growing concern, I know, for me, because, like, for example, when I do my sermon preparation, I do it the old school way. I go back and translate the text, look at the keywords within the text, try to look at a term that we use in German called Zeitzuleben, which means the setting in the context of the story or the text. But what's quite interesting to me, a lot of my colleagues are using artificial intelligence in preparation of their sermons. And so they'll just go listen to somebody and say, oh, well, let me go read what so-and-so said about this particular topic, and I'll gain some of my knowledge from their sermon. Or I'll go listen to T.D. Jakes, or I'll go listen to Charles Stanley or somebody and gain insight rather than doing their work on themselves their own way. Because I come from the old school. That's one of the things I enjoy and respect about Danny as a deacon, because we both served at the same church, and I learned to gain great respect from him, because in a lot of ways he's like old school, and I respect that. And so the point being is that a lot of people are taking shortcuts to doing, you know, the old-fashioned work. It's kind of like E.F. Hutton used to say, we make money the old-fashioned way. We earn it. And so the point being is, I wonder, have you had any, I know you're a pediatrician, and mental health is probably not your expertise, but how would you relate, particularly for young folks, when they are preparing for a paper or a research project? They can just go look it up on AI and get their paper. And instead, some plagiarists, as opposed to doing the work themselves, and how that can maybe, in a long term, project into a mental health issue because they are doing work the old-fashioned way.
Well, I'll just say that AI is new technology, and we are grappling with it every day, trying to figure out how that will affect our kids. One, it's technology that's emergent. We cannot fight it. We have to live with it. We have to find a way to work with it. It has potentials to increase productivity, but it also has potentials to cause harm. A good example I'll say is, you know, when I first arrived in the U.S. many years ago, we had MapQuest. And I remember driving all the way from D.C. to New York with a map and a truck. And I was trying to flip through the map as I was driving along, trying to know which turn to make. Well, we don't do that anymore. Now we have GPS. Now, when I first drove that route with the MapQuest, subsequently I had to drive without the map. I mastered the route. Now with GPS, I don't master any route anymore. I just follow what the GPS says. So it's a bit dumber. So, but I guess it made me more productive as well, right? I don't have to stop by to ask anybody where I'm going. Mm. So it's a two double-edged sword, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so we expect kids to learn, process the idea in their heads, and come out with a solution to a problem.
Mm.
That's the point of education, right? You learn some ideas, and then you apply it to the problem. AI, in the end, I think will accept it. I think we're going to have very dumb great-grandkids, because they will depend on just technology for everything. The things we were memorizing, I mean, I remember we were using log table and all that to do math in those days. Kids don't even know what it means now, the four-figure table and all that stuff. They just go to a calculator. So in 50 years from now, the kids then will just go to AI and do stuff.
Hmm.
So the challenge is to how we stop them, how we help them learn without losing what's important. The essence of the learning should not be lost. And part of what, so you find the older people are a bit more resilient because they went through hardships, right? You go through hardships, that builds your resilience. So when you now face catastrophes in life, you're not just falling apart.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to teach my nephew mathematics and his multiplication tables, and I happened to have my old slide rule. And he said, "What the heck is that?" He didn't even know what a slide rule was. Most people today don't even know what a slide rule is.
Exactly.
And they're actually work faster than a computer in a lot of ways. But he didn't know what a slide rule was, and he was able to learn his multiplication tables much quicker on the slide rule than he was with his calculator.
Wow.
Right. So that's the challenge, right? The hardships help us build some mental resilience.
Mm-hmm.
So when crisis comes, we don't just fall apart.
Indeed.
That's why when they talk of helicopter parenting, they don't let the kid even fall. You know, you must not have any problem. You know, the parent just dives in to solve all the problems. Well, someday you won't be here. How will the kid survive? Or someday the kid now no longer lives with you in Georgia. He now lives in California. And he runs into a crisis there, and mom is not there, dad is not there. How will that kid cope? And that's the problem with AI, that the AI might make life so easy, make life so convenient, that when they don't have access to AI, they don't have the mental muscle to then survive. And so I like technology. I think we should embrace it. We should embrace AI, but we should embrace it with caution, knowing that we might end up losing something while we gain a lot of productivity. So we're doing things faster. We might also lose a lot of, I mean, to write a sermon might take you 3-4 days or even weeks. The old school way.
The old way, yes.
But if you put it through AI, you might get it out.